On this episode of Connected Nation, we continue our coverage from Mountain Connect by talking to a representative from a company that's 107 years old. They just got into the broadband game a couple of years ago. Learn how they're leveraging what they call the Matrix model to problem solve everything from Dig Once needs to the fast-paced demand for data centers across the country. I'm Jessica Denson, and this is Connected Nation. We are again at Mountain Connect 2025, taking place in Denver, Colorado, August 4th through the 6th. And I am sitting with Mike Miller. His official name is Michael, but he prefers Mike. He's with HDR. He is the broadband practice leader. Do I have that title right, Mike?
Yeah. Very good.
Yeah. Welcome.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for stopping by. We met last night, and everybody at Connect Nation is a big fan of yours.
Awesome.
They say you're the greatest. And I've seen you walking around and making friends or talking to old friends, and you've always got a smile on your face.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Happy to be here.
Yeah. You like Mountain Connect?
Love Mountain Connect, yeah.
Why is that?
It's one of those shows where it's more intimate. You really get to connect with people. And I don't know, people are genuine.
I heard a tale told of ISE that there was not a lot of people at the New Orleans event.
Oh, yeah.
That so
you know what, I think there's just so much fatigue right now with shows and conferences and the run up to BEAD funding has been painfully slow.
Everybody's a little tired.
Yes.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of fatigue around this. You come to a show like this, though, but you don't see it. And we're so close to funding. Uh-huh. So
it's just trying to get over that finish line.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So talk about HDR. I asked you right before we started what HDR stood for.
Yeah.
And tell us what the
it stood for. The founders, Henningsen, Durham, and Richardson. Uh-huh. And the company's 107 years old, was founded in Omaha, Nebraska, as engineering, added architecture. 107 years later, we're full service, 14,000 people around the world.
Oh, wow.
And really focused on communities we live in. So we do the transportation, the water, the architecture for the library, the hospital.
So you touch just about everything, just about, the infrastructure?
Yeah. Have a really strong environmental permitting practice. So we help the states now in broadband be compliant to the federal funding.
Uh-huh. So talk a little bit, you kind of touched on it there at the end, but talk about your role specifically as broadband practice leader. Is that a new area for HDR? I couldn't say it there for a second.
Yeah, absolutely. So we've done a lot of things all over the years, but really never had a focus on telecom.
Uh-huh.
So broadband is about 2 years old when I started. And when I got here, it was a whiteboard. What do you want to do? What should we do?
Uh-huh.
We had an interest in the federal funding with the Broadband Infrastructure and Jobs Act, BEAD program, and late to the game. So what are you going to do?
Yeah, what are you going to do? So at that point, what were you saying? Were you like, okay, where can we really put ourselves in and help and use our background and infrastructure to really make an impact?
Absolutely. Uh-huh. And so looking around the landscape, I found partners in KPMG and RSM and folks who were already in the broadband office, who had established relationships and were driving the programs. And for HDR at that point, it's around compliance. So federal permitting, NEPA, Section 106. And that's where we've landed and really have been fortunate to be with partners in now 6 states and helping them be compliant with the federal funds under the NTIA. So
are there some things that are just true throughout? Like maybe there might be something a little different about this regulation, but there is the fact that you've had some experience deeper even than yourself in infrastructure helps you navigate?
Yeah, absolutely. So we do work in a lot of states with the DOTs. Mm-hmm. And so we understand what the federal funding looks like and what compliance to the feds are. So we have that understanding of grant programs and compliance. But I would say every state's a little different. Their BEAD programs, their broadband offices are different. the program is the same, I should say, but the way they address it, the number of people they have to support it, everything's different. So we approach it as where can we fit? Where can we help? Do you need boots on the ground? Great, we can do that. If it's just administrative functions and helping with the compliance, fine, we're fine there, right?
We so it's all of levels that. Of it. Then that
absolutely, mm-hmm. Yeah. And the fact we do have people in every state that can roll a truck and inspect a project and make sure it's going in the way it was designed, or we need to do an environmental impact statement, mm-hmm. we can do that. So we're able to lever in.
Yeah, you have a lot of reach and understanding in many areas.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. So you said DOT.
Department
acronym.
Of Transportation.
Yeah, Department of Transportation.
Sorry.
No, yes. No, I got it.
Yep.
I was going to pick it up, though, is that, you know, there's this whole talk about autonomous cars.
Yeah.
I was once had the privilege of interviewing the CEO of Lyft, and they just bought a company overseas that's dealing in autonomous cars. Are you hearing anything about that with people with connectivity?
Yeah, absolutely. So your roadways are really intelligent. We call it intelligent transportation systems.
Oh,
ITS is an extension of that DOT because they have cameras, they have sensors, they have picking up all kinds of data along that roadway.
Uh-huh.
That's not just for autonomous vehicles, it's for traffic control and other things, right? So your roadways are really, you know, intelligent, monitored transportation pathways.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, my wish for all of it is that we can have open access networks that the state uses, mm-hmm. that the communication companies use, the data centers use. So we're not tearing up the same pieces, you know.
Over and over.
Over and over every time. Oh, we have a new provider coming in. No, we have a pathway built. Lease this fiber or this tube and this conduit. So ultimately, it's going to be a culmination of that. It's just slow, right?
Like, yeah. Anything with infrastructure takes longer than it seems like it should, right?
Yes. And there has to be leadership in that space. And the leadership will come from the governors and the broadband offices, hopefully, that says, wait, you want to do what on my transportation and my right-of-way? Let's plan. Let's build capacity for multiple people, right?
So I talked earlier with the broadband manager for Los Alamos County in New Mexico, and he was talking about open access networks,
yes.
as well.
Yeah.
Is that really kind of the way that direction a lot of people are moving, or is that just some, or what are you, in your opinion, what are you seeing out there?
I mean, it's utopia if we can get there. there's a lot of people with vested interests,
uh-huh.
that, you know, may not see that as the best, you know, path forward, but if I'm a taxpayer in a state and I'm, you know, paying for the update of that roadway or you know, that corridor,
uh-huh.
why shouldn't I expect more out of my tax dollars than to build a pathway that accepts multiple providers and is used by the state? You know, far too often we see these afterthoughts, and now we need more capacity, and we're going to tear it up again. To me, it's just frustrating.
Because you're doing the same work over and over.
Yeah. So if we can coordinate and just have a policy where it is truly dig once, that's what we need to shoot for. And if we don't start, we'll never get there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people say it's too late. It's never too late.
It's never too late, yeah.
We've got AI. We've got quantum computing. You know, what's next?
And that's the thing. There's going to be... The technology's moving so quickly,
yeah.
you have to build future-proof,
right?
Right,
yeah. Yeah.
What else do you see are the big issues within this space that that you're hearing from people or that you see that nearly need to be addressed right now?
One of the major things is, and everybody's talking about it at these conferences, is AI data centers, hyperscale data centers. They're going everywhere. And now they're going in rural communities. Because they have power or water or both. You need them both. But a lack of connectivity. And if we can think forward and know that there are going to be edge data centers, there has to be, right, for low latency applications. And that if we can help create this fabric, this middle mile, to me, that's what's next. I would like to see more cooperation from the hyperscale data center providers and the folks that are building their networks to think ahead and say, all right, I'm going to have a, you know, 2-gigawatt data center in a rural community that's really not going to benefit that community much. What can I do to contribute? Because I'm going to use their power and their water. If I can contribute access, fiber, connectivity, that's in the best interest of both parties, right?
So it's a win-win.
It's a win-win, and we're building out the fabric of the country, which we need. If it's not just data centers, if we're onshoring manufacturing and we're onshoring semiconductors and, you know, pharmaceutical tech, they're all connected. So we need to think about that, right? All of these infrastructure projects need connectivity. And if we continue to think of these one at a time, we're never going to build capacity for all of them.
Yeah, we need to think bigger, big picture. How do we partner together? How do we work together to do better for all of us?
Yeah. It would have been nice to get ahead of this BEAD funding, you know, whatever, 3-4 years ago. When we knew.
You can't move back time, right?
Yeah. We knew we were going to spend, we haven't spent it yet. So $42 billion could have helped a lot with the fabric. So if we have non-deployment funds that are now going to have a chance to be allocated, can we use it for that?
Yeah, that's a good question.
Why not?
Yeah. With the states that you're working with, you said you were in 6 states right now. Are they looking at some of those things? Or are you putting that before them? Like, hey, like, consider some of this.
Yeah, we're talking about it now. And the big thing now is I've heard today that there's going to be a bill in front of Congress for non-deployment funds to be used for middle mile and maybe some equity projects that were taken out. And so hopefully that gets passed, and that if we don't spend the money on the fiber to the home, that the state can use that for projects like this, right? Middle mile connectivity, digital equity, support education.
What do you think would be the impact if we don't do those things?
We miss a big opportunity, and we don't move the ball forward in rural communities. And they'll always be behind, right?
And technology is just going to keep going forward.
It's not going to stop.
No, it's not going to
stop. The rate of change is incredible right now. I mean, I've never been more excited for our industry and our time in history. Very optimistic. But there's some things that we need to do now that will make a difference.
So you lead state programs, and you have a counterpart who does local and county?
Yeah.
Kind of how do you two approach it, or do you work together?
Yeah, we do, and we work a lot with the internal HDR team. So we are in the communities maybe doing the water or the roads or the transportation plans. And so we're trying to educate those folks that, hey, we do broadband now. So
yeah, there's another piece of the puzzle here.
Yeah, exactly. And so if we can help them get ahead of the planning in the community transportation plan or the community development plan, and we put broadband or technology into that, we've leapfrogged that community ahead. It's no longer an afterthought. And my stance is telecommunications is a utility. You can't live without it, right? You can't live without internet connectivity.
I could not.
Right, I can't. Uh-oh. So it needs to be part of the planning. It needs to have a space in the trench for, you know, right along with the electrical and the water and the sewer, the gas.
Just think about it in advance instead of as an afterthought.
Yeah, exactly.
What do you think? I know there's a lot of talk about AI. Mm-hmm. Is your company, it doesn't have to just be broadband. Is your company looking at different ways to implement AI within the infrastructure framework?
Yeah, so we're having a very thoughtful approach to it. We have a lot of intellectual property, whether it be architecture, design, or the way we do things. So we want to do it inside our fence and make sure our data and our client data is protected. So how do we use AI against our own data to improve our design or our methodology, process, et cetera? So yeah, I think it, you know, we're an old company, but we know that AI is we're building these data centers, right, for our clients, and so we better be using it. And we are. It's, I would say it's just a very thoughtful, secure approach to design using our own data to do that.
To try to innovate.
Yeah, yes. Exactly.
So, you know, you've heard a lot, or at least I've read a lot, because I'm supposed to, because I'm a comms person,
yeah.
That some of these data centers take up a lot of energy.
Yeah.
Is some of your group looking at that, and how do we improve that? What do we have to do? Do we have to move this around to make it better? I've heard everything from, like, the color of the inside of it matters.
Yeah.
Of a data center.
Yeah, so they use a lot of power, mm-hmm. and we're designing multiple gigawatt data centers, which is a lot of power.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're looking at how do we move generation on site. You can't rely on the grid.
Right.
You can't move gigawatts of power to rural communities now where these data centers might be. And it's everything. It's natural gas. It's small modular reactor, nuclear energy. You know, it's how do we span that? Because it's going to take a while to permit and turn up an SMR, a modular reactor. So what do we use in the meantime? So is that natural gas? So we have a group that does power generation, utilities, planning, and we're actively involved with these hyperscale data centers to help plan for that. I will tell you the rate, the pace that these are going in is incredible.
Uh-huh.
And we're not just working for one, we're working for multiple.
Define incredible.
Well, they tell us if you have 100 more people, we'll take them tomorrow. Like,
oh,
we
wow.
need more, faster. So now you're looking at maybe retrofitting data centers that were cloud data centers for mm-hmm. AI. Well, what's that going to take? More power, more water.
Yeah.
So how do we redesign that and bring that up to an AI standard? Existing facilities, do we look at now warehouses that were distribution, logistics?
Mm-hmm.
Can they be data centers?
Yeah.
Everything's on the table.
Everything's on the table right now.
Yeah.
Yeah. I find it interesting. You talked about speed, and Japan broke the internet speed record with a terabit.
Yeah.
So it's just like, I had to look up what a terabit was.
Yeah.
And I wrote a little piece on it. And so my point being is that the next thing could just come out of nowhere.
Absolutely.
So how do you prepare for what could possibly?
Well, you got to be agile, and you can't rely on what worked yesterday.
Yeah.
So we're being challenged by our clients in this space to do that. How do we think about cooling data centers differently? So there's not a lot of air-cooled data centers in this space anymore. The new design is water-cooled, closed loop, so we can recycle the water and try not to evaporate it and lose it. Yeah, everything is being asked of us to challenge the status quo.
So you working in the broadband space, what's your background?
My background is networks, data centers. So I work for co-location data centers.
Uh-huh.
And a long time ago, I worked at a major railroad was in telecommunications. And we did everything ourselves. It was our own fiber, our own microwave along the rails. We had our own data centers.
On the rails?
No, outside of that.
Oh,
but
okay.
We self-performed everything.
Oh,
so
wow.
I had a really well-rounded experience
uh-huh.
of what it takes to run an IT telecommunications organization.
Uh-huh.
So I learned from the ground up.
My grandfather worked for the railroads.
Yeah.
In Texas.
Might have been part of ours.
Yeah.
And now we're talking about merging those railroads into transcontinental.
It's wild.
Isn't that fun?
Yeah, it's fun.
Yeah.
HDR, are you based in Omaha?
Yeah, we're based in Omaha. The company started there in 1917 and have held our headquarters there. We're privately held. Well, we're employee owned. So
okay.
Every employee has the opportunity to have shares in the company. The culture of the company is just incredible.
That's why you're so happy.
That's what attracted me. Yeah, right?
Yeah.
How do you not walk around with a smile on your face?
Uh-huh.
when you're challenged with telecommunications.
That's true.
Yeah.
And but it's a global company, right? It's
yes.
All over the world.
Yeah, absolutely. So we're in the Europe, Asia, Middle East. Strong growth for us. Obviously, the North America.
Do you have counterparts in broadband in those other countries?
I do not. Not yet.
Not yet. Oh.
I look to grow the practice. But we're active, so we're involved in, of course, data centers, finding connectivity in Australia. Australia is a high-growth market for us, especially around data centers. So in broadband and telecom, HDR is just staying in the lane that we were fit. So we're so new, right?
Uh-huh.
But growing incrementally with the talent that we have. The nice thing about HDR is we work in what we call the matrix. And the matrix is I don't work for a group. I work for the company.
Uh-huh.
And I can grab a resource in North Carolina if they have a skill set that I need for a project.
Oh, that's fantastic.
That's what helps us grow at scale.
Uh-huh.
Because if we were, you know, in a group and couldn't work outside of that group,
you couldn't
we'd
scale
be very limited.
Yeah.
And when one part of the economy has a downturn, you know, mm-hmm. that group could be down and looking for work.
But now you can pull from each other,
cross
and
sector,
benefit each other, and that's fantastic.
It's a great concept.
See how that benefit, and I know that our team at Connected Nation have done some work with you, and they're excited about that.
Yeah.
So yeah,
I really like the relationship and respect the team at Connected Nation, and the projects we're talking about are really
exciting,
fun.
Yeah.
We'll love to announce them when they happen here shortly.
I don't know what else we can say yet.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't want Heather and Chris to come out here and go, Jessica,
right.
What'd you say? Yeah. But
more to come on that, though.
Yeah. So what's Omaha like? I've never been to Omaha.
Oh, it's a great community.
Uh-huh.
It's middle of the country, very conservative, family-oriented community.
Uh-huh.
Lot to do. I mean, we don't have major sports teams, but...
Everybody, I mean, my picture of it is steaks, obviously,
yes.
Omaha steaks.
Yes.
And a lot of, like, maybe some cowboys and some...
No
some
cowboys, although we do have a River City Roundup that, you know, tradition, you know, lives. It's got the top-rated zoo in the world, the Henry Dorley
in.
Zoo.
Uh-huh.
It's amazing aquarium. And, so we're kind of known for that. And just a good community.
And you grew up there?
Grew up there. Lived in Kansas City for a while, and then came back.
Missouri or Kansas?
It was Missouri.
Kansas City, Missouri.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, Mike, it's been a pleasure talking to you.
Thank you so much.
It was a pleasure meeting you last night.
Yeah.
I was so glad you sat down and stopped for me because I went looking for you.
Yeah.
I was like, I had to talk to Mike today.
Enjoyed our conversation.
Yeah, me too. Mike Miller, who is the broadband practice leader with HDR. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
I'll continue our coverage from Mountain Connect 2025 on the next episode of Connected Nation. Until then, I'm Jessica Denson, and this is Connected Nation. If you like our show and want to know more about us, head to connectednation.org or find our latest episodes on all major podcasts.